Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Billy Embody. With me, Sonny Shipp, to break down a fun edition of the podcast with the top five running backs from the 1900s to 99, and then the 2000s to 2019 is Sonny Shipp. But we'll get to that in a minute. Sonny, how are you? How's quarantine life? How's the kids?
Good, man. Everything's going, everybody's staying healthy. So that's the main thing. And I think we're, next week would be their official last week of school. So I guess this is our last week of having to homeschool. And, you know, for some of my, I know that there's some people back in Pineville who will be listening to this podcast. And if you happen to be one of my former teachers, yes, your worst nightmare came true. I was responsible for teaching my children over these last few weeks.
Well, I'm sure they're just so much better off with you and as a teacher, and there's no possible way they're going to have to repeat a grade, right?
Dude, my son is in third grade, and he's asking me questions about geometry. And I'm like, geometry was the absolute worst, you know, geometry was worse for me than algebra was. And those two were kind of hand in hand. And I'm a numbers guy. I'm a math guy. You know, I like math and stuff. I love messing around with statistics and things like that. But he's asking me about shapes and, you know, what has eight sides and things like that. And I'm just constantly hitting Google to where finally he's like, just Google it, Dad. Just Google it.
Yeah, I was not a big geometry guy. The sciences would have really, really thrown me for a loop having to teach those. But I was good in history, decent enough in English. But man, I could not imagine having to teach my kids like the sciences, especially. That's where I would really, really be up a certain creek without a paddle.
Yeah, I was just flabbergasted. I was like, are they really teaching y'all geometry in third grade? I mean, you know, this is granted, third grade for me was a long, long, long time ago, many moons ago. But I don't remember doing geometry in third grade. You know, I still remember doing the addition and the subtraction and learning how to actually check your work and things like that, to where the amount of stuff that they're teaching these kids right now in school is just beyond me. Please, please, please find a vaccine and get some medicine that works so these kids can get back in school in September.
Are they working harder, would you say? Like, because we work from home, so we're kind of used to this. But do you feel like they're doing a little bit better of a job working from home? A lot. So I get kind of 50-50, like when we're talking to recruits, some are like, oh man, I love it. I wrapped up all my assignments on Monday and Tuesday, and now I've got the whole week to work out and do whatever I want. How are they doing in terms of staying on task?
Well, my wife is a kindergarten teacher. She's also taught first grade. So she has that part of, I guess, that regimen, kind of enrooted in her lifestyle and stuff, to whereas with me, completely opposite. But, she's been having to teach her class and stuff. So I've kind of taken on a little bit more of a role of helping our kids with their schoolwork. And they've been good about it. Because the amount of work that the teachers send over, I think is probably less of a workload, because my son, he could sit down and what we do is, you know, they send him like math, reading, language, science, social studies, and then I think grammar. So they send six lessons and something to do each day. But we do what we do with him is we'll take two subjects a day. You know, he'll knock out math and he'll knock out reading probably in about an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And, you know, and so that's the hard part. The hard part is, you know, they are in school for, you know, a 7 hour work day. Well, they finish here in an hour and a half, and they're like, all right, I don't have anything else to do. I want to go play. So trying to get them to read or to actually do something constructive is, you know, is really the uphill battle. But our kids, you know, my son, he's outside practicing soccer, you know, throwing the football up in the air. They're riding their bikes and things like that. So they're getting the physical exercise of it. But I think from the educational standpoint, that it's a lot less time consuming for them to do it from home.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. You got to move class, move from class to class or whatever. But, look, I mean, only another week before you can't hold that, whole, you know, moving on to the next grade or being held back, over their head to get them, to do work. So, good luck trying to get them to do anything this summer, once they're done with school. But I feel like we should hop on into, what we've got to talk about. We've been wanting to do this for a while, but really with commits and the draft and everything like that, we've just kind of put it off. But this is going to be a fun one, a good trip down memory lane for a lot of people. And that's starting with the top five running backs in LSU history from the 1900s. We're going to dive into those guys first, and then we'll dive into the 2000s after that. Sonny, starting with Terry Rubisky, he's one of he's number five on your list. But before we do that, just quickly share the other guys on the list, because you did do 10 when you wrote this on Go 24/7.
Yeah. And one thing I did in looking at this is I wanted to expose as many of the, you know, of some former Tigers that maybe some of our younger generations haven't heard much of, aren't really familiar with. And so in trying to do that, I've kind of had to take a little bit of a different path. So for instance, you're not going to hear, when we move on to the 2000s, you're not going to hear Jacob Hester's name. You're not going to hear Clyde Edwards-Helaire's name. You're not going to hear Steve Van Buren, who is in the NFL Hall of Fame. You're not going to hear Jerry Stovall in this edition, because those guys are going to be slotted to other positions. You know, I wanted to do some athletes, wanted to do some all-purpose players, some return players, to really get as many of these guys, you know, show them a little bit of love and introduce as many as we could. But started at number 10, this was a guy, Art Cantrell, played from 1969 to 1971. You know, some of the funny stories from talking to my grandfather and my dad, who gave me a little history lesson on some of these guys. This was the type of guy that, if you remember, Dazed and Confused, where the guys, you know, the guys had mustaches back in the 70s in school, the bell bottom jeans, everything, and just hell on wheels, basically. And that's what Art Cantrell was. The stories of multiple police officers getting calls that, well, Art Cantrell's up at it again at the local bar, having to go get him, and just the pick, you know, you can just picture the coach out there in the parking lot, damn it, I told you not to do this again. But a guy who ran for 1,600 yards, 9 rushing touchdowns, which was good back then. You know, this was good back then. He was a, you know, he cracked number 10. And then, of course, Eddie Fuller, number 9. We all remember Eddie Fuller from the earthquake game against Auburn, caught the touchdown pass from Tommy Hodson that set off the earthquake, ran for 1,800 yards and 9 touchdowns. Caught 75 balls for almost another 900 yards, former Leesville native. And then number 8 was Harvey Williams, you know, probably one of the better recruiting stories before recruiting really took off. You know, was all set to sign with Texas A&M, walking to his announcement in the gym. He decided that, you know, he was going to flip the script and sign with LSU. Knee injuries kept him from really being that elite back that he was rated coming out of high school. He still ran for almost 2,900 yards and still sits fourth on the list of all-time leading rushers in school history. So, not bad right there. Gary James, probably next to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, one of the best receiving running backs in LSU history, played with a team with Dalton Hilliard, they called him the Dalton James gang, 1982 to 85. You know, they formed one of the best 1-2 punches in school history. 2,200 yards, almost 1,000 yards receiving, 122 catches. Just a, just a fantastic duo. The number six, a guy named Brad Davis. People remember him, and I know you've seen this before, but the night that time stood still in Tiger Stadium, when Burt Jones got off two passes and I believe it was in 4 seconds. They were shocked that there was time left on the clock. And Brad Davis caught the winning touchdown pass against Ole Miss. And ironically, that was his only catch during his career.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. That was one of two touchdown catches during his career. And, ran for 2,200 yards, 16 touchdowns, just one of those guys that if you watched LSU football during the 70s, you knew of Burt Jones, you definitely knew of Brad Davis too. So that's the six who sat outside of our top five. So that way, when people are listening to this now, they know like, oh, okay, Billy and Sonny's not drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Friday because they forgot all these players.
well, we're not as drunk as Ole Miss fans leaving Tiger Stadium after that game, because they probably were thinking, what on earth am I seeing? That can't possibly be a time clock operator that was sober doing that one, right? Little home cooking there.
Yeah, and they laughed. They said there were the stories that you heard about signs saying you're now leaving Louisiana. Set your clocks up, set your watches up, because that's one of those that LSU doesn't really have that traditional rivalry game, I guess you could say. I think LSU Texas A&M has a chance to be that, but the LSU Arkansas battle for the golden boot, I mean, that was just ridiculous, and it failed miserably as trying to create that as a rivalry. But back in the day, LSU and Ole Miss, I mean, it was that true rivalry, that there's so many great games. Of course, Billy Cannon and the run, we all know about that. But, Ole Miss coming in, stealing Archie Manning out of LSU's backyard, and there's a lot of there's a lot of history between those two teams, and doing something like this, it really takes you back down that lane, that memory lane of being able to see, some of those stories that were even a little before my time, if you can believe that.
That's probably the most shocking thing about this, but let's jump into Terry Rubisky. He's gone on to be a longtime NFL coach. I'm honestly one of the most well-respected NFL assistants, but before that, he had an incredible career for the Tigers in the 70s as well.
Yeah, in 76, he was the first Tiger to rush for over 1,000 yards in a season, and the first to top 200 yards in a game, and that was in 1976. Kind of crazy when you look at now that all of the gaudy numbers that guys are putting up and stuff. But he's had a history of coaching with your team, with the Redskins and stuff. 30 years in an NFL assistant. But he became the first back in school history to top 2,500 yards in a career. And I think he's one of those guys that paved the way to the run on running backs that LSU had that we saw on that. After him, number four, we've got Dalton Hilliard, one of the, New Orleans Saints fans love this guy. He was a smaller back coming out of Patterson, Louisiana. He and Gary James was in the same class, and Gary James was actually the highly recruited, the more highly recruited guy of the top of the duo. And then when you go back and you look at what Hilliard accomplished, one of the top all-around backs in SEC history, over 4,000 yards and 44 touchdowns on the ground. Caught 120 passes over his career for another 1,100 yards, and did that in sharing the workload with James. So I think that's what's truly impressive. You know, if you would have had just one of those, and you could argue, you know, that the wear and tear would have gotten to him. But if those two wouldn't have had to split the carries, I mean, it's crazy to think about the numbers that that those two could have put up.
Yeah, no question. And as we move through this list, we have somebody who's right behind Dalton Hilliard in school rushing yardage, and that's Charles Alexander, 27 school records, 40 touchdowns. He was a workhorse and a Heisman Trophy finalist. And look, in the year that Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, where Charles Alexander was drafted in 1979 in the first round, this is one that we'll certainly note in a big way with what he was able to accomplish in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, you know, of course, all LSU fans remember Billy Cannon winning the Heisman Trophy, and then of course Jerry Stovall was up there. He was in the he was very thick in the race for that at one time as well. But Charles Alexander set 27 school records. You know, 40 touchdowns. This dude toted the ball 855 times during his career. I mean, can you imagine the wear and tear that put on his body? And to compare running backs then to running backs now, if you've got a running back that's got 855 carries right now, he's probably not going to go 12th overall in the NFL draft like Alexander did. You know, they're going to dock him for that. But, you know, got a spot in the College Football Hall of Fame from the 2012 class, and just just one of the best players in LSU history at any position when you go through and when you look at the production that he posted.
Well, and I mean, the fact that he lasted seven seasons in the NFL with the Bengals, I mean, that is even more impressive after the workload he had in college.
Yeah, and probably why it was only seven seasons.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, he did what he could after giving it all for the Tigers with 855 carries. That is something else. Billy Cannon, number two on the list for you. And if you're an LSU fan, I mean, you probably already know his story backwards, forwards, however you want to read it. But, of course, one of the all-time greats for a reason, and has a statue outside Tiger Stadium that's going to be joined by Joe Burrow here in the near future.
Yeah, and I know that there's some, you know, there's some old-timers out there who watched Billy Cannon play, saw him do the things that he did, and is probably wondering, like, how could he not be number one? And I get it. Trust me, I get it, you know, but choosing that number one, it was very tough. But with Billy Cannon, and outside of the run that we've all seen so many times, you know, we're talking about a guy at 6'1", 210 pounds. Reportedly, they said he ran the 100-yard dash consistently in 9.5 seconds. I mean, that is absolutely blowing and going at that size. You know, an athlete way before his time. The honors that he took home, of course, the Heisman Trophy, you know, every Player of the Year honor that you could really think of, consensus All-American, one of the, just one of the best, you know, probably, I think without a doubt, the best two-way player in LSU history. There could be some, you know, Jerry Stovall's got a, he's got an argument in there, and I know there's a couple of other guys that could be in there too, but when you look at what Billy Cannon did, ended his career 1,800 yards, 19 touchdowns rushing in only three seasons. This is when true freshmen couldn't play varsity. 31 catches, 522 yards. Of course, you know, we've got the punt return, and ironically, another one of these fun facts, we all know about the punt return against Ole Miss for 89 yards, right? We've seen it 100 times, probably 1,000 times. That was the only punt return for a score in his career, and it came on that night. you know, when you watch that run, when you watch that run and everything, you're probably thinking like, oh man, he probably had about three or four punt returns for touchdowns. He did return a kickoff for a touchdown, but that was his only punt return for a touchdown.
What a wild, wild moment. One of the all-time great moments in LSU history. And we come to number one on your list of the guys from the 20th century, and it's LSU's current running backs coach, Kevin Faulk. Did you worry that if he wasn't going to be number one, that Kay Faulk might come after you, might find you, and let you know, hey, I've got to be at the top of the list?
Man, I've got so many Kevin Faulk stories that, you know, he played with LSU 95 to 98. He signed with LSU in 95, and you know, I still remember going to his announcement ceremony. It was at a local place in Lafayette, and just, you know, this guy played quarterback in high school at Karen Crow, and you know, long before the internet, long before, I mean, you know, at this point, when you're a recruiting junkie like I am, you know, you were having to call the 900 numbers, you were circled the dates to where you could get a couple of magazines a year that featured recruits. Now, really about the only thing that you had to go off of was the, you know, you had Gatorade Player of the Years, you had USA Today Player of the Years, you had Prep Star, which was a recruiting service that issued a magazine. But Kevin Faulk was, you know, he had literally over 100 offers. I mean, anybody and everybody that you could think of offered this guy. And he played quarterback, so he took the snap, and he either ran right, ran left, ran up the middle, but he was an absolute monster in high school. Got to LSU, still the all-time leader in rushing yards in school history with 4,557, and rushing touchdowns with 46. I'm not sure about this, but I believe he is still the SEC's all-time leader in all-purpose yards. You know, and so, I mean, those numbers speak for themselves. But aside from what he did on the field, when Jerry DiNardo was hired as LSU's coach in 95, and LSU was in the midst of six straight losing seasons, you know, the program was just reeling. Kind of in a downward spiral, and one that the LSU program wasn't really accustomed to. And Jerry DiNardo came in with this slogan, "Bring back the magic." And the day that he had his press conference, you know, at LSU as the new coach, he hopped in the car, drove over to Lafayette to see Kevin Faulk. And I think Kevin Faulk, you know, we can go back and we look at some of the biggest recruits that in program history. Leonard Fournette's in there. Obviously, Joe Burrow is in there. But I think at a time when LSU's program was at one of its lowest points, Kevin Faulk deciding to stay home and play at LSU really started to reverse the course that, you know, that the program was in. And so still to this day, when we think about, you know, who is the biggest game changer in forms of the biggest impact that he had on the program, you know, Joe Burrow is up there, and it's probably tough, but, you know, I don't think there's any question that Kevin Faulk is right there with him. And you could even make an argument that the impact and the way that he helped change the program at a dark time was even more important than Burrow's.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, and it's going to be fun to see how Kevin recruits and how he starts to stack up running backs for LSU and build off of signing Kevontae Bradford in 2020 and just. You know, I think he's a great fit now at running backs coach. I didn't get a chance to watch him as a player for LSU. I remember watching him as a player for the Patriots, just kind of growing up. But I mean, he was legit. I mean, he was Brady's safety valve. He was always just stacking up catches and one of the better running backs on that Patriots team that for years just kind of had could plug in any running back and be successful. But Kevin Faulk is probably the best out of that group.
And not only that, one other thing, he considered leaving LSU after his junior season and going, you know, and going to, and going off to the NFL. The, you know, the scouts loved him. They were just, you know, they were sky high on him. They thought that he was going to, you know, they thought that he was going to be great. He returned to LSU for his senior season. And, you know, so that right there is just another, is another reason why when I think about the impact that he had, you know, unselfishly, he chose to return to school because he loved it so much when, you know, and then of course in his senior season in 1998, LSU had a losing season. So, you know, his stock may have taken a little bit of a hit, but still 13 years with the Patriots, five Super Bowls, three rings, just a, what a great story. And LSU's lucky to have him now in a capacity to where he can recruit and he can share that story, that passion, and that love that he has for the school.
Yeah, not bad to be flashing three Super Bowl rings around recruits. That usually helps out a good bit. There's a good number of Super Bowl champs on LSU staff now. I mean, you've got James Craig, who's got one. Ed Ogeron's got some national championship rings, not only from LSU, but USC now. So, bling bling for the LSU coaching staff. But for now, we're going to take a quick break from the Go 24/7 podcast. On the other side of this break, we're going to come back and bring everybody kind of up to speed on the top five running backs from the 21st century so far. And we'll be breaking those guys down on the other side of this break from the Go 24/7 podcast.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Welcome back to the Go 24/7 podcast. Thanks for listening. Quick reminder, guys, to leave us a rating, leave us a review. Tell us what you'd like to see on the, or hear on the podcast, I should say, on our iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening to the podcast. You can do that in our review section as well. And also, we'd be remiss if we didn't remind you to subscribe to go247.com. Check us out for just $1 for your first month. And if you're listening to this on Friday, there's a few hours left of the 60% off annual subscription sale as well. So check that out on go247.com. Sonny, a little bit more recent history here. With LSU in the 2000s, a lot of these guys, or a couple of these guys, are fantasy darlings for me on the fantasy football front in the NFL, including Joseph Addai. But kicking us off at number five is Charles Scott, who really was one of my early favorite LSU running backs to watch when I was growing up, kind of watching LSU and the SEC.
Yeah, and you know, it was a tough call for me between Charles Scott and LeBrandon Tofield, but you know, I just in the end, Tofield's injuries, you know, I couldn't overcome those when looking at everything that Scott accomplished. And man, I can still remember Charles Scott in that from recruiting, and this was before the cell phones became even prominent. And calling Charles Scott and his mom, and I can't remember if it was his mom or his dad, but they said, "Yeah, we'll have him give you a call back. He's off messing with the pigs right now and getting ready to feed them," because he lived on a farm up in Jonesboro. Man, but You know, when you go in, when you look at what Charles Scott did, you know, he was the number 61 overall prospect in the country in the 24/7 Sports Composite. You know, a lot of accolades coming out of high school, Mr. Football in Louisiana, the Gatorade Player of the Year in the state. And ended his career as one of the most productive running backs in the 21st century with 2,300 rushing yards, 32 touchdowns. Those marks are fourth in school history in career touchdowns and seventh in rushing yards. Had a huge year in 2008 with 1,174 yards. It's still one of the, you know, it's the 10th highest single season output in LSU history. And had 18 touchdowns that year too. And, you know, the only two guys with more rushing touchdowns in a season is Leonard Fournette with 22 during the 2015 season, and then LeBrandon Tofield had 19. And so, you know, that gives you an idea of, you know, of the production that you got out of Scott. His senior season was cut short when he broke his collarbone against Alabama. And I still remember, you know, me and Shay were up there in the press box together on that trip and stuff. But 800 career rushing, eight 100-yard career rushing games, eighth in school history with that. And, you know, unfortunately, he didn't go on to have a successful NFL career. He was taken in the sixth round of the draft. But, you know, overall, with his time at LSU as part of a backfield that featured Richard Murphy and Keelan Scott, Keelan Williams, Mr. Cass himself. He, you know, Charles Scott had a good career, and, you know, that's why he edged out LeBrandon Tofield for that fifth spot.
Yeah, that Keelan Williams was pre-Sadiq Charles as far as Cavs goes.
He was a beast.
Those guys got to be battling it out. Maybe bring him back to campus, get them around each other, and see who, in fact, has the bigger Cavs. A Cav off, I guess. But
new feature.
Yeah, I know, right? Joseph Addai, who I drafted multiple times as a fantasy football player early on, he was somebody that for Nick Saban really made a difference there and ended up, of course, winning a national championship.
Yeah, and played in more games than any Tiger running back with 51, started 19, you know, a really, really solid, just a solid 4-year career. Even played some fullback early on, ranked seventh in school history with 2,500 yards on the ground. His 66 catches are good for sixth place. And, you know, just each year, you know, had 430 yards 1 year, 520 another year, 680 as a junior. Finally, as a senior, he kind of became that bell cow. Finished with 911 yards despite an ankle injury that kind of slowed him down. And, you know, probably more people remember him for his success with the Colts after they took him with the 30th overall pick in the first round of the 06 draft, won a Super Bowl, made the Pro Bowl in his second year when he ran for over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns after topping 1,000 yards as a rookie. But, you know, got hurt and only lasted six seasons in the league, but 4,500 yards, you know, that's a pretty productive NFL career. In six seasons, hey, you know what? You hit that pension.
Yeah, good for Joseph Addai to hit that pension. That's big. And Cincinnati also drafted another LSU running back, in Jeremy Hill, who didn't stick around Baton Rouge long, but you got him at number three on your list with his impressive yards per carry average. And just, I mean, overall, he was just a beast.
Yeah, you know, only appeared and only played two seasons, left as a redshirt sophomore. Had an incident in high school that kind of prevented him from playing as a true freshman in 2011, but he was part of that. Redemptorous crew that included Lael Collins. That team was absolutely loaded for now Dutchtown head coach Guy Mistretta. But in two seasons, Jeremy Hill ran for 2,100 yards. his 1,400 yards in 2013, his sophomore season, is still fourth all time in school history, and his 16 touchdowns on the ground that year tied for fifth with Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the 2019 season. And for those wondering, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's going to be mentioned with our in our all-purpose back. So, you know, don't fret. We're gonna reward Clyde for that season that he had. But getting back to Jeremy Hill, you know, he took over as a starter in 2012 over the last five games, averaged 5 yards a carry, kind of became the feature back the following season, averaging 6.9 yards a carry. And the only person to average more yards a carry during their career in a season at LSU is Darius Geis, a 7.5 yard average in 2016. And so that, you know, that kind of gives you an idea that while Hill's career was short in Baton Rouge, you know, I don't think there's any question that if he would have had the three seasons to play as opposed to just two, that his numbers would have been a lot more impressive and, you know, would have eliminated any questions that some may have of, you know, does Jeremy Hill really belong at number three on that list?
And you bring up Darius Geis, our number two LSU running back in the 21st century so far. For me, and some of our subscribers even mentioned this on the board, probably could have gone either way. Little biased now that he plays for the Redskins, but I feel like Geis, with what he brought to the table as really just such an elite athlete. I mean, his physical running style, I remember that run down the sideline against Louisville where he just popped the guy. He just loves contact. And he's just a kind of a different guy compared to Leonard Fournette, where Leonard was just such a man just as soon as he walked on campus. And I mean, There's probably an argument for Darius Geis to be number one, but you add him at number two.
I've never seen a more vicious runner than Darius Geis. You talk about a guy who got the most out of every carry. As a freshman in 2015, he ran for 436 yards on 51 carries. That's an eye-popping 8.5 yards a tote. I mean, that's behind, you know, Leonard Fournette. And we all remember that season that Fournette had in 2015. I mean, you take out the, you know, if he wouldn't have had the bad game against Alabama, he would have definitely had a spot in New York. You know, he was the leader for the Heisman Trophy going into that, you know, going into that weekend. And, you know, for Geis to do what he did then. But the following year when Fournette battled injuries in 2016, you know, Geis led the SEC in rushing with 1,300 yards. He led the league in rushing touchdowns with 15 and averaged 7.6 yards a carry. You know, so when you look at those first two years, 8.5 yards a carry as a freshman, 7.6 as a sophomore. You come back and you look at what he did as a junior, more of the same. You know, led LSU, ranked number two in the SEC, averaging 104 yards a game, ran for 1,284 yards, one of five players in LSU history with back-to-back seasons of 1,000 rushing yards and double-digit touchdowns. So, you know, I think there is a definite argument that can be made between Darius Geis and with Leonard Fournette. For me, what pushed Fournette over the top was that unbelievable 2015 season. You know, and if we go back and if we look at Fournette, what Fournette did, he's fifth on the all-time career rushing list with 3,000 yards, in three seasons. Started with the freshman rushing record with 1,000 yards in 2014, but that next year, man, I mean, watching him run was just truly special. You know, one of the best rushing seasons in league history, 1,953 yards, 22 touchdowns, tied a school record with 10 games of at least 100 yards, had four games with 200 or more yards. Derrick Henry went on to win the Heisman Trophy that year with 2,200 yards, but he also had three more games. And so, you know, and when you put that in, when you put that in comparison, I think that really, you know, that that really makes you realize, you know, the type of year that Fournette came, that Fournette had, became the fastest player in school history to reach 1,000 yards in a season, consensus first team All-America selection as a sophomore, should have been up to New York, but that 31 yards on 19 carries against Alabama, you know, that just knocked him out of consideration from there. Disappointing 26 season with the high ankle sprain, you know, didn't finish out the season, didn't play in the bowl game. But I think when you go back and just when you look at when you compare Fournette, when you compare Geis, that 2015 season that I think will you know, is still one of the best in SEC history, not only LSU, but SEC history, that just gave him the little bit of the nudge.
Yeah, I think you covered it as well as we could have. I mean, you can debate like highlights, you can debate obviously like total body of work, but man, when you talk about this 2015 season that Leonard put together in Baton Rouge, it was just unbelievable and will be remembered by many, many, many people for a long, long time. And now both continue their NFL careers. Leonard having one of his best, well, his best season probably in the NFL so far in 2019. And Geis is still looking to get healthy and get on track in the NFL as he enters the 2020 season. But look, Sonny, we've gone on long enough, I think, on this topic. Appreciate everybody listening. Hope everybody has a great weekend, Sonny. Keep having those kids get on that schoolwork and get it done, and they'll be out in summer and playing around even more soon enough.
Oh, man, absolutely, brother. Enjoyed it. It was fun writing this, fun even talking about it. And, hey, just a reminder to all you – all of our listeners out there, if you go in and if you give us a rating and a review, Billy and Body is going to send you a check for $5.
Do people still send checks? We can talk about Venmo. We can talk about Venmo,
man. But checks are old, man.
Checks are a 20th century thing.
Checks are
what the guys on your top 10 list collected.
You probably don't even have a checkbook, do you?
I do have a checkbook. Okay. But yeah, it's got a lot of dust on it. So anyway,
yeah,
but, everybody have a great weekend. Sonny, pop the top for me. I'll be along soon as we get this edited and online, but, really enjoyed it, man. It was a fun one.
Same here, brother. Y'all be safe out there.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. Hope everyone has a great and safe weekend.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.